Moving on down, since we're a little late. So we're on 2284 in regards to Catherine Peachy, DVM. Okay.
And case 85 as well?
Yes, case 85 as well, but we will vote on them separately, right? Okay. So this is the time and place scheduled for the informal interview of Dr. Catherine Peachy in case number 2284. Tracy, I'm not reading these together, right?
Yes, they're both at 12:15.
Okay.
So you can do both of them at the same time.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, so Dr. Catherine Peachy and Dr. Jennifer Mayo, DVM, in case number 2284 and 2285. This matter will be heard by the board pursuant to the authority given to it at ARS 322234. Dr. Peachy and Dr. Mayo, please come forward and introduce yourself and your attorney.
Hi, I'm Dr. Peachy.
Thank you. Have a seat. Okay, Dr. Catherine, or Dr. Peachy and Dr. Mayo, you have.
And Reed Campbell on behalf of Dr. Peachy and Mayo, no problem.
You have received a letter informing you of the matters to be discussed today and the possible actions the board may take at this informal interview. As a reminder, those options include dismissal, issuing you a non-disciplinary letter of concern, censuring you, placing your license on probation with terms that may include continuing education and practice restrictions. The board may also suspend your license for up to 30 days, assess a civil penalty, or refer this matter to formal hearing. The purpose of this informal interview is to inquire into the facts and circumstances of this case. The board has read all the materials you submitted. If you have any additional materials you would like to present to the board, please do so now.
We don't have any additional materials.
Okay, thank you. This proceeding is being digitally recorded. As a result, it is important that everyone speak loudly and clearly and that only one person speaks at a time. We will begin by asking the lead board member assigned to this matter to give a brief summary of the case, and then you will be given an opportunity to respond. Following your response, the board may wish to ask you some questions. If present, the complainant will also be given an opportunity to address the board. If you have any questions for the board or anyone giving information during this interview, you may ask them through me. Dr. Thompson, can you please give us a brief summary of the case?
Yes. On January 25th, 2022, Coconut, a 12-year-old female West Highland White Terrier, was presented to Dr. Mayo for a dental procedure and extractions. The procedure took approximately 6 hours. The dog recovered and was discharged later that day. The following day, the dog was presented to Dr. Peachy due to lethargy and inappetence. The dog was examined, diagnostics were performed, and the dog was administered buprenorphine prior to discharge. On the morning of January 27, 2022, the dog was unresponsive with shallow breathing. Complainants headed to an emergency facility. Unfortunately, the dog passed away prior to arrival.
Okay, thank you. Okay, Dr. Peachy and Dr. Mayo, at this time I would like to swear you both in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you are about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Okay, if one of you would like to begin, we'll now like to give you the opportunity to respond to the summary and present whatever information you believe is relevant.
I'll give just a brief joint statement on behalf of both doctors, if that's okay.
Go ahead.
On June 7, 2022, the investigative committee recommended that both of these complaints be dismissed with no violations. Following those recommendations in July, when the board received it, you had some questions as why the dental procedure took as long as it did, and you moved these to this informal interview. My clients and I are confident that after we address that concern, you will understand why Dr. Mayo had to devote the amount of time she did in this case, and you will agree with the committee and dismiss these recommendations. Just in sum, the dental procedure on Coconut took longer than expected due to the health of the teeth that were being removed. Specifically, it was medically necessary for Dr. Mayo to make a gingival flaps and burr bones to ensure adequate exposure of the root of the teeth. Once the roots were exposed and Dr. Mayo began to remove them, some of the roots crumbled into pieces due to Coconut's advanced dental disease, and cannot be removed in one quick succinct single root movement. During that process, repeated and multiple dental x-rays were taken of each tooth to ensure that the entire root was being removed and that no remnants were left behind. If Dr. Mayo had not taken her time to do a thorough job, root remnants could have been left behind, which would have led to significant medical complications down the road. Obviously, if the roots had come out easily in a single action, the procedure time would have been significantly less than it was. Also, as reflected in the medical records, the procedure had to pause during the time that an arrhythmia was occurring. It is standard of care in those situations to pause the dental and assess Coconut's response to the intervention. In fact, a navy block was identified more than once, and each time the procedure had to be paused so that Dr. Mayo could give the medication and monitor Coconut. Then, after Dr. Mayo assessed Coconut and determined that she was stable, the procedure could be continued. Because Coconut remained stable, the process of extracting teeth was continued. If at any point during that procedure had Coconut presented that it needed to terminate the procedure or back off, she would have done so. It should also be noted that closing the gingiva, Dr. Mayo had to smooth down the alveolar bone to prevent discomfort and tearing. This too required additional time under anesthesia. And that's why the procedure took longer than anticipated. As we often say, and the board has said today, sometimes hindsight's 20/20. But even with the benefit of hindsight, the doctors will tell you that they wouldn't have done anything differently in this case. The delays in the dental procedure were all necessary given the severity of the disease they were facing and the unforeseen arrhythmia that had to be addressed in order to ensure the best possible outcome. My clients are now available to answer any questions you may have.
Okay, I would now like to ask the board members if they have any questions for either doctor.
Yes, I'm gonna try and do things in sequential, the way that the cases were laid out.
Sounds good.
Which is actually opposite, the numbers are actually opposite than how things happened.
Okay, so yeah, you're right.
We'll go with Dr. Mayo first, because you actually saw the patient first. So I just had a couple of questions in regards to Coconut in the dental. And I'm very well aware of the struggles with dental. So a couple of questions though. Can you explain to me your thought process on choosing your anesthetic medications?
I chose them because it would provide adequate sedation so that she's comfortable and adequate pain control so that we could use as low of ISO as possible. So it spares an ISO because there's more side effects to the ISO than the pre-medications. She was also stable on her exam that morning. I had no concerns moving forward with those medications. And blood work wise, I was not concerned that she wouldn't do well with those medications. I also use them very commonly for a majority of my procedures and rarely have any issues with them. There are certainly known side effects to the medications that I chose, but given the health that I found the patient in that morning, I thought she'd do just fine with them.
So you weren't concerned with her age and using dextromethorphan?
It's a very low dose, and she did not have any heart complications, no heart murmur, no arrhythmias that were known, so I was not concerned about using it.
And I know that there was a lot of communication or questions about the communication with the owners and the length of time on what the extractions would take. You had mentioned that the extractions would take 50 minutes. Obviously, it went a little bit longer than that, but from the interview, you had mentioned that once you get in there, you don't always know, and a lot of that time was also spent, that 6 hours was cleaning the teeth and doing x-rays and such. Mm-hmm. Approximately how long would you say that you were taking to do the extractions themselves?
The extraction time was 3 hours and 42 minutes.
Okay, and when you said that the teeth were breaking after you drilled out the bone and you were trying to extract them, did you find that on multiple teeth, one tooth?
What? All of the teeth were crumbling, so all I didn't get any of the roots out in whole pieces. They were all really damaged and crumbling and breaking apart as soon as I was putting the extractor in.
And so once they were crumbling, were you finding that the pieces that were left behind, were they really adhered to the remaining bone that was there?
Yes, I was having a really hard time removing it.
Okay. And then when we had our AV block, could you walk me through that?
So the first AV block was identified fairly early on in the procedure. So we gave a half reversal dose of the dexmedetomidine, which is very common practice for when we see that side effect of dexmedetomidine, and I monitored for a few minutes to make sure it resolved. I was trying to be proactive and corrective before it actually became an issue. This was very mild to begin with. And she responded after a few minutes. We weren't seeing any more AV blocks, so we continued. The second time that we saw, we reversed the rest of the dex, and she responded very well. The AV block went away, and she was stable, so we continued. The next time that we saw AV block, we decided to give her a quarter dose of atropine so that we could bring her heart rate up and correct the arrhythmia. I also talked with Dr. Peach, who's beside me, doing a dental of her own, just to make sure, she has a lot more experience than I, to make sure that she would agree with my plan before moving forward. We talked about if she did not respond to that intervention, that I would finish the tooth I was on, close everything, and wake her up. But she didn't respond as well as I would have liked to that first dose. So after waiting, I believe it was around 10 minutes in between, we gave her a second quarter dose of atropine, and then the AV block resolved. And the rest of the procedure, we didn't have any other complications. Her blood pressure remained adequate the entire time, so I wasn't concerned about proceeding.
Okay, so if I heard you correctly, you gave the quarter dose of atropine, it still hadn't quite resolved, you waited additional 10 minutes to see if it would resolve, and then you gave the additional quarter.
Correct, I was still seeing an occasional block, it had certainly improved, but over that 10 minutes in between, I was still seeing some, so we gave her a second dose and that resolved it.
Okay. And at that point, when you had given that first quarter, knowing that you had already tried to address the AV block twice before with reversal of dexmedetomidine, now you've done this and it's taken another 10 minutes, you've not seen that. Were you at that point starting to feel like maybe you should have stopped the procedure?
There was a lot of time in between, so it wasn't all in like a 30-minute increment of time. And she was doing very well and was stable in between each AV block. And again, I consulted with Dr. Peachy to ensure that it was okay to proceed since she was stable and had responded. So I was comfortable proceeding with the procedure since it did respond.
Okay. And then at any point, did you feel that perhaps the fact that they were crumbling on you, because that can be a very scary and frustrating experience when those teeth are doing that. Did you ever think that maybe it was a little bit beyond what your comfort level was? Was it something that you might want to just say, hey, you know what, if this is how these teeth are going to be, I might just need to hit stop and seek a referral?
Yeah, I have done quite a few dentals before that point, and I've had many teeth that had that issue. So I was comfortable and familiar with removing the rest of the root. Just it took a lot more time than I was expecting. But I felt comfortable proceeding because I had done it plenty of times before.
Okay. And then because the procedure took a little bit longer than expected, Coconut had a little less recovery time than we probably would have liked, right? We would have liked to have her Coconut hang around a little bit longer at the clinic. Did you see Coconut before the owners picked Coconut up?
Yeah, so I popped by her kennel multiple times after her dental procedure. She was up, sternal, bright, alert. She was looking around the clinic, responding to us, talking to her. She looked very comfortable and calm for the rest of the afternoon before she went home.
Okay, and did you see her walk out the clinic?
I did not personally. I did not take her out of the kennel when she was discharged.
Okay, and did you talk to the owners upon discharge or on the phone just prior to discharge and discuss the AV block at all?
I did not talk to them about the AV block.
All the questions I have for Dr. Mayo, if anybody else does.
Okay. Any other board members?
No.
Okay, Ms. Holloman?
Yeah, I'd love to hear from the other DVMs on the board too about the age of the dog, the number of arrhythmia occurrences, and the duration, the 4 points, the duration of the surgery. Is there a point at which it would have been better medical practice to have called a temporary halt and postponed the remainder or whatever might have been done. And lastly, the fourth point is recovery time before discharge.
And that, those are probably items that we can discuss. Would it be best to go ahead and...
Can we get to discussion?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because you said those are for the board members?
Yes, yes, okay. Sorry, yes.
So did we want to... Dr. Thompson, did you have questions for Dr. Peachy too?
Yes,
should we do those and
yes.
then move to the complainant?
Does anybody have any other questions though before we move on?
Well, should we ask the questions now of Dr. Peachy before we go to the complainants?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you had any or if anyone else did.
Yeah, I can pose those questions directly to Dr. Peachy. Have you had, is it common practice in your practice to have dogs of that age under anesthesia for that length of time? And if so, how long is the recovery period that you usually do until they're discharged?
Ms. Allen, if I can just ask a question real quick. So Dr. Peachy is a different part
okay.
of the case.
Okay. So I can ask that of Dr. Mayo.
Yes.
Okay,
yep.
That's why I was trying to get that clear initially. Okay. Dr. Mayo, same question to you.
Okay. I'm sorry.
You want me to repeat it?
Yes.
Okay, happy to. Within your practice, how often is a dog of that age kept under anesthesia for that long? And is that the norm? Is that an exceptional amount of time? And what would be the standard recovery period for a dog that age under anesthesia for that long, and let alone the arrhythmia occurrences? And how long would you retain them prior to discharge? And would there be any special instructions you would give as a result of the length of the surgery, the age of the dog, and the occurrence of the arrhythmias?
I would say the majority of our dentals are in senior patients because that's the time the disease is concerning enough that people are comfortable doing a dental procedure. So a lot of our patients are seniors. Dentals can take several hours for extractions. That's not uncommon. I don't know the average length of time that the patients in my clinic are under anesthesia. It's not something I tend to monitor. The other veterinarians at my clinic are also a lot more experienced than I, so I am going to be a little slower because they don't have the same amount of experience doing dentals as they do. So I imagine if somebody with 5 or 6, 7 years of experience more than I probably would have finished a little faster than I would have. AV block is something I would say common but not uncommon to see as a side effect of dexmedetomidine, and we will commonly proceed by reversing it and then giving atropine if we need to, so it's not something new or something that I've never seen before. We see it all the time. And typically post-op, if the patient recovers and is doing well, I'd say we generally keep them for 2 to 3 hours after surgery.
And as far as the number of arrhythmia occurrences, at some point do you have a cutoff, say when we reach a certain number, a risk factor is elevated and so we call a timeout and postpone any further surgery?
Well,
or is there an unlimited number of arrhythmias that can occur?
Because I expected it to be secondary to the medication that I reverse, I was comfortable proceeding. If it were any other sedative combination, I would have been concerned that it was an actual heart problem and we wouldn't have proceeded as long as we had. If she were to have another block beyond that point with already having half dose of atropine, we had talked about not proceeding beyond that point. We didn't see any more AV block and she was stable the rest of the procedure, so that's why we continued.
Okay. Who is we?
I consulted with Dr. Peachy.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so now we can move on to questions for Dr. Peachy.
Yes, so Dr. Peachy, so Coconut came to see you the following day. And not quite feeling up to par. So on your exam, you noticed that we had some pale mucous membranes. You did a PCD and blood pressure. Can you tell me anything else about that visit that stuck out?
When I first examined her, she
was standing, she was already in the treatment area. Also, when I first examined her, my techs had already brought her in and spoken to the owners originally. And so she was standing, looked at her gums, they were, you know, a pale pink color. She was standing with her mouth like open a little bit. Heart and lungs sounded normal, no murmurs, no crackles or anything like that. She didn't seem to be having any difficulty breathing. Temperature was normal. Overall seemed quiet, but that isn't unexpected, even just given her age and obviously the day after a procedure as well. Nothing else significant was noted.
And so your thoughts at that point in time for her clinical signs were?
I suspected pain.
Just pain.
The oral pain medications weren't able to be given. And definitely with large extractions, it's very painful. I suspected, especially since I didn't hear any other concerns, like with her lungs or anything, that her open mouth was also secondary to pain.
Were you able to speak with the owners before you did your physical exam?
No.
Okay, so you were just going off of information that was relayed to you from the technicians?
Yeah, I went and spoke with them after the fact, before I did the diagnostics though.
Okay, so you did speak to them before you implemented your treatment plan?
Yes.
Okay. So the information that they gave to you was, could you kind of go over what they were saying they were noticing at home?
That she was lethargic, didn't want to eat. They did say that they had noticed some like nasal gurgling going on, which I didn't appreciate in the clinic, but same thing, not uncommon to see. Our dental procedures are in dorsal recumbency, and with all the extractions and water, it's not uncommon to see that sometimes get into the nasal passages and cause some irritation in there. But there was no like, discharge or anything coming from the nose.
And so you mentioned that the oral medications weren't able to be given because Coconut wasn't wanting to eat, didn't quite feel up to it. So your choice for pain medication, knowing that she was already kind of not as bright and alert as you would expect, could you walk me through why you chose an opioid versus the NSAID?
Yeah, I wanted to kind of have a multimodal approach to her pain. I wanted to give her an injection of the pain medication with buprenorphine, and then hopefully control some of that pain so they could also go home and try to give the oral medication again as well and see if that helped her, instead of just giving an injection of the Rimadyl alone. Yes, the buprenorphine can be sedating to them sometimes, but it is not uncommon for us to use it whether pre-op or post-op, even waking up out of anesthesia. So with the way she was acting in clinic, I wasn't expecting it to be a severe side effect for her.
I don't have any questions.
Okay. Do any other board members have questions for either doctor?
I'm going to have one question, but it probably is more just around general operating procedures in the practice. And I'm not saying this is the case, so I don't want it to be that I'm trying to make any decisions. But in a case where we have a newer doctor, that it may not be as fast, admittedly, right, with some of these dentals, and dentals are something that you do get better at. And then we have a dog that is older, that has had some heart issues or heart complications under anesthesia. Is it ever something that in the practice a more experienced doctor might take over to speed up getting this dog out from under anesthesia? And was that considered in this case?
Yes, it is practice for us to do that. We were both in dentals at the same time. And so I don't know if it was, I didn't feel like she was struggling to the point where I needed to step in. She seemed to be continuing to make progression at each step. And especially since the dog was stable, I mean, that's why we did talk about if it wasn't responding, we needed to stop. Because the teeth were not normal and not coming out simply. But there was continued progression. It never felt that she was stuck, like, for a significantly long time doing one part. I think each part took a long time. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. It does. And we all have to learn somewhere, so I'm not saying that that had to happen. I'm just trying to get a feel for the practice under the situation.
But no, it's not uncommon for us to jump in.
If you... It sounds like you're pretty much side by side.
I was right next to her.
So, kind of as a follow-up, could you just have swapped patients?
My patient.
I mean, would that be a logical thing?
Your patient died.
My patient crashed in the middle of it, so no. So mine was very much more critical. It ended up living. And I had a significant amount more of teeth during that time. I think I took about 30 teeth that were just falling out. So it was a very much more critical dental during the one that I was dealing with, too. Hers was stable, it was progressing. Ours was progressing, too, obviously. But no, I wouldn't just switch there.
Okay, any additional questions? Okay, the three of you may step back, and now we are going to hear from the complainant. If you would please come forward, whether it's both of you or one of you. Okay, please state your name for the record. Okay, Mr. Suma, I'm now going to swear you in. Do you swear or affirm that the evidence you're about to give will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. And you are obviously the complainant in this case. Okay, we have read the materials you have provided, and you may now address the board. This is your time to share anything that you would like. Obviously, keep in mind, we have read through all of the statements you've provided and the records, but this is the time if you want to summarize or if you want to respond to anything that has been, you know, stated here today.
Is there a reason they weren't asked about why they put Coconut under anesthesia and then continued to leave the room and see other clients? We were told that that happened. That's outrageous to me.
Okay.
Is that standard procedure board okay with that? You put a dog under anesthesia that age and just leave her and go do your other jobs for the company? That's all it was. They admitted that to us. They didn't tell us how much. When I pressed, that was all of a sudden that just stopped.
Okay.
I think a big part of this issue.
This is right.
So I also asked about her age, like you did, and I was given a very snarky, well, age is not a disease, and that was it. So I don't know
right.
More I can add to that.
Okay. That's okay.
Do we want to just take a 1 minute break?
Yes. We're just going to pause for a moment. Okay. So, did anyone have any questions for Mr. Suma?
Yeah. Well, why didn't we?
That's your point of mind.
Yeah. Am I just forgetting something, or is this the first we heard about walking away? Because I didn't see that in the records or anything for any testimony or anything. So is that hearsay? Staff told you? The veterinarians told you? How does that?
Yeah, the staff told me. I believe Dr. Dr. Mayo told me that. I'm trying not remembering who did, he told me it was staff, it wasn't something I made up. That would work.
There was mentioned in the investigative committee where the doctor would step away and go into her office and work on paperwork, but it's close proximity to where the technician is performing the initial part of the dental.
So presumably they're doing the polishing and things like that during those moments?
X-rays, yes.
Okay, so not during the extraction part?
No idea.
That was not, it was led to that during the initial part where they were cleaning, doing x-rays, that she was not right next to them while they were doing it, but in that room, in that general vicinity, in her office, which is in that vicinity.
That may be why it didn't stick in my head as something odd or something. All right, that will.
Okay. So any more questions of the complainant at this time?
Yeah, she said that they found the AV block early in the procedure, and my timeline shows it was over 3 hours after she started anesthesia that they found it. I think she was just not being monitored properly. That was not early in the procedure, 3 hours in.
Ms. Altman?
Yes, Mr. Soma. Was that, they reported, the Dr. Mayo reported that there were multiple times, three if I recall correctly.
Right.
That there was an arrhythmia. Were you referring to the very first one?
I don't know. All I have on my records, which I got from the staff right that day before I left, was 12:18 they discovered an AV block, and was given, and then again at 12:28, that's it. She was given anesthesia at about 9 o'clock in the morning.
Thank you.
Okay, any further questions? Okay, thank you. You may step back. Okay. Dr. Peachy, Dr. Mayo, and your legal counsel, do you have anything further statements, additional remarks you'd like to make?
Yes, I believe Dr. Peachy can come up and address just a couple of quick issues that were raised by the complaint on behalf of both her and Dr. Mayo. She can address the question about when she left the room and during what part of the procedure, and also explain the timeline of when the AV blocks direct you toward in the record those are found. Go ahead, Dr. Peachy.
Well, I find the record. It is not uncommon that during the time that the technicians are performing the cleaning, the initial x-rays, and polishing on whenever that occurs, that we are not directly sitting right next to them. Our office is 5 feet away, so we're always within earshot if anything is occurring or if the techs are concerned about anything. As far as timeline, it looks like the first one was noted at 9 a.m. And then the second one was noted at 11:48, and then after that to the medical record.
And there's a difference in time, difference in time stamping based on when it was put into the computer, you think, or?
No, the time on when the AV block occurs.
Right, but from what you have to what the client has on their paperwork? So I think they said 12, so would that be a difference in when it was actually entered into the computer, or what would be your explanation for that?
I think,
do not know.
Yeah, if we look at the medical record, there were actually four documentations of AV block. So the first one was noted at around that 9 o'clock, they gave the half a reversal, the next one happened 11 something, they gave half a reversal, then the next time was in the 12 o'clock hour, and that's when the atropine was given. So that's probably what the complainant saw, was the mention of that in the medical record with the atropine, not the mention of it from the when the antecedent was given.
Just sounds like there were two in the 12 o'clock hour, but
yeah.
The trouble with that is that the owner actually got it incomplete, so he came in the day after to get a copy, and the receptionist didn't know, so it wasn't finished, and sent it home. So the notes that were in there about it were just what the technician had made. I had not filled in that part of the soap yet. I was off that day, so when I came back into the office, I went in and added all the specific notes of when the medications were given in the appropriate part of the record. They had put notes what time the drugs were given in another slot. I had added it into the timeline where they're taking the recordings. They had just not put it in that spot as well. So I completed the record that he had gotten before we finished filling in the entire soap. But all of the times that the drugs were given were written in the top portion of the soap. I just added it in a second place when it was along the time of them taking recordings. So it was in two spots. So the soap that he has, it's only written in one location when the drugs are given, not in the section where he was looking.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yes.
Yeah, I have a quick follow-up. You mentioned during x-ray and polishing that it was not unusual to step away, for the veterinarian to step away.
Correct.
Can you tell me where those happen in that 6 hour or 5.5 hour period? I mean, I can't guess based on my human dental experience where x-rays are done at the beginning and polishing is done at the end. I'm not sure how it goes.
Correct. So the first 45 minutes to an hour, they're getting on the table, stabilized under anesthesia, taking their initial readings, they're doing x-rays, breaking down tartar, and starting to clean teeth. And I'm sitting at my office probably a distance of where you are to where I am.
That's more than five.
With a wide open door that I can hear and talk to them the entire time. Then once I go in and review all the x-rays and I do a complete oral exam, sit back into the office to call the owner to talk about all the findings, go over cost, and then go back to the patient and do the extractions. Once I'm completed with the extractions, then the technician takes over finishing cleaning, polishing the teeth, cleaning their face, trimming toenails, recovering them, and I'm just sitting right on the other side of the wall with the doorway.
Was there any indication to you that after that length of time, that about, was there any hesitation about not stepping away when it came to polishing because the length of the time the dog that age had been under? Or do you
she was stable and not having any complications, so I was comfortable. In the moment anything goes wrong, I can hear them talking. So
Who's they?
My technicians.
Okay. So technicians, excuse me.
5 seconds to walk to them. And
technicians were monitoring in your, they're present monitoring in your absence.
That's how it works, yes. The technicians do all of the anesthesia monitoring.
Okay, no further questions? Okay, you may step back. Mark, is it okay if the complainants come back forward? And then I will, of course, give them, the respondent, the final. Okay. Yep, you can come on forward again.
This is the first time we're hearing that there were four instances of this with the AV block. This is the very first time. Nothing was discussed with us. Nothing about this. Why would they keep going with her, with this going on? She's 12 years old. It happened right immediately, but why would they? This was an emergency procedure. This is ridiculous. It's just greed to do this. There's no reason for it. Four instances, we weren't told that. That is that normal? Do you just plow ahead with a 12-year-old dog? And yeah, I don't understand that.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions for Mr. Suma? Okay. Again, I allow the respondent to have final say if you want to wish to address his.
I think that the discussion regarding the AV block's been thorough and the reasons why they proceeded on the fact the dog was responding fine and appropriately and that it appeared to be medication based and not a symptom of a larger heart problem. So I think that's been thoroughly discussed already.
Okay.
I'm very sorry. I just want to say one more thing, if it's okay.
Okay.
When we got Coco back, she was like a limp rag. She did not recover well. They're saying she recovered fine. Everything was great. She was like a limp rag. She was not responsive to any commands whatsoever. That's why we brought her back the next day. And after that, after they gave her the opioid, she just died. She basically just died. overnight. She did not recover well from that initial procedure. I don't care what they say. She was not responsive. She could not walk. She should take a step and sit down and lay down.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Okay. There's no further questions. This concludes the portion of the informal interview in which the board hears testimony. The board will now deliberate and decide what to do in this matter. Dr. Thompson, this was your case, if you'd like to start.
Yes, I definitely appreciate feedback from other members of the board. This is a tough case. Obviously, the outcome was not what anybody would have wanted. And you know, as we've discussed before, a lot comes down to doctor discretion and comfort. There are some things that, you know, I might have done differently as a practicing doctor, but it doesn't mean that what was done necessarily fell outside of the line. So I'd definitely like to hear other perspectives.
Can somebody address, being the non-vet on the board, saying something like, you know, the four AV blocks, can anybody address that to help the complainant as well as myself to understand whether, again, I don't want to say is that common, but that you would you continue on? Would you be on high alert? What would your...
So I'm actually going to defer to Dr. Nowsley on this because I in private practice did not use dextromethorphan. That was a drug that I just was not comfortable using in general.
Okay.
The subsequent issues...
Well, the question is, were these arrhythmias due to the medication or something else? It appears that this was a medication, dextromethorphan, a response to that particular drug. And I use it a lot. And sometimes, even in cases where I'm a little concerned about the drugs I'm giving, for the simple reason I can reverse it. And that's one of the drugs you can reverse, or some of the others you can't. And it is very common. I would go so far as to say almost in every case of administering that drug, you will get some AV block.
Okay.
You will get an arrhythmia with that drug. It's how you address it, and was it addressed appropriately? One question I had was, when the atropine was given, was any dextromethorphan still on board? Because atropine doesn't work well on arrhythmias induced by dextromethorphan. Now, I have done that very thing. I've reversed it. Then, if I still had usually bradycardia is what I'm addressing, then the atropine will work. But using atropine to reverse or to control the arrhythmia, it just doesn't work. But that's not what they did. They reversed. But I was just wondering if any was still on board when they wanted to get a better response from the atropine. I don't think it really affects.
Well, and then that was one of my questions too, is how long do you see the bradycardia, the AV block? Mm-hmm. Because we did reverse part of it early on in the procedure, and then again, about almost a half hour before we saw the next AV block. But we saw a lot of that bradycardia. How many hours, you know, what's our half-life? I mean, that's already 2 hours, almost 3 hours mm-hmm. into this procedure, we're still seeing bradycardia. Yeah, so that seemed a little long.
At that point, I would expect atropine to reverse that bradycardia. Yeah. Early on, while there's still dexmedetomidine on board, it's not going to do it. It's not going to help.
Well, that's been my experience. I know people that give the atropine before they even give the dextromethorphan.
Right.
Just to prevent that exact issue.
Try.
Right?
Like in terms of bradycardia.
Yeah, bradycardia. Not the arrhythmia.
Not the block.
But the bradycardia part.
Yeah.
So I think it is very common with dextromethorphan.
Very common.
Like
every time, almost.
Yeah.
So that was one question. I think they handled that appropriately.
So it's not even something you would necessarily bring up to a client when they when they are picking up, because it's just kind of a standard?
No, happens all the time. Happens all the time.
If we move away from this discussion of the arrhythmias, whether it's bradycardia, the AV block, to a layperson, which I think I hear from the complainant, that he thinks it's an emergency, like a heart attack.
Yeah.
It's not that, right?
Correct.
I mean, it's, okay, can you kind of?
Yeah.
For?
Like I said, I think we all, Eric, saw Ms. Frost nodding her head from the technician monitoring anesthesia. Happens all the time. And sometimes you address it, if it's severe, maybe as an emergency, but the vast majority of the time, this is reversing. I like to reverse that drug when my patient is fully anesthetized because I don't think I need it anymore. It's not really a pain med. So I like to reverse it early. That's the way I do it, so it's out of there and some of these arrhythmias can resolve then. And if I still have bradycardia, I use atropine. But it is something that occurs so often, and it's never routine when you see something on an ECG that's irregular, but we address it. And from what I heard, they addressed it.
Right.
Okay, so it's something you, if you're lucky, it won't happen, but you kind of expect something's gonna happen.
Right.
And that's why you monitor.
It's
right, and it's why you just don't cut as fast as you can and sew them back up again. You
it's also
monitor
not,
it so you
right. it's
can make these little adjustments.
You're not going to stop a procedure based on that.
Okay.
It's also not a required monitoring parameter, the ECG.
That's true.
So there are a lot of times that it's used in a sedation type procedure,
mm-hmm.
And we're monitoring heart rate, respiration rate, you know, SpO2.
Or you use it for an aggressive dog. It's not on a monitor.
Sure.
At
yeah.
All.
It's not. Yeah. It's a chemical restraint almost versus even a sedation or pre-anesthetic or induction. You know, assist. So it's not even something that we know is possibly even happening. But it's not even being monitored. I mean, it's something that at least the veterinarians that I've worked with understand the dexmedetomidine, and it's not something that we're going over. There were X number of AV blocks, and you know we reversed. You know.
Yeah, if we assume that was due to the drug, I think it was.
We're actually not using it on cardiac, like known cardiac patients either. I mean, that's
right.
Definitely
right.
out
if you
for those patients.
Detected some type of heart disease, you're
right.
not going to use it on those.
Yeah, I've not seen a veterinarian use it in those cases ever.
No.
But
because you might already have an arrhythmia, a propensity to an arrhythmia. Yeah.
And just to comment on, it is very normal for technicians to be monitoring anesthesia, and it's
I've
very
never
normal
seen
for
a doctor
to be doing
anesthesia.
Other things. In fact,
even when they've been under that long.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I would say that's more the norm than the abnormal.
Well, and the veterinarian is there.
Right.
You look up and you can see the monitor.
Now, if you told me the veterinarian went next door to get a Coke at Walmart,
that's different.
That would be something different.
Yeah.
But it is common for them to not be physically there during cleanings, during radiographs, during even induction or recovery, they're still available. You could still, you know, say, you know, Dr. James, I need you to come look at this, this patient. And that's very common. I've not ever seen a veterinarian leave and go examine other patients during a procedure, which was why I was concerned, because I hadn't heard that part. But I understand being in the office immediately adjacent to.
You can also hear the monitors.
Right, yeah.
As far as heart rate goes.
Mm-hmm. And again, you can typically see or communicate verbally with your team. So I'm very accustomed to that.
I think that it is, I've heard this before with cases, that they're surprised that technicians are monitoring anesthesia or doing the cleaning, but in the human realm, that's normal too.
Right. And I'm just concerned about it being this lengthy of a surgery.
They're not under anesthesia.
That age, is there any special monitoring?
Well, and just to clarify, it's long for, yeah, we don't do anesthesia generally. It's long for dental, but there are a lot of procedures that are 6 hours.
I mean, I've seen.
For anesthesia in general, 6 hours is not.
I've seen dentals, I have seen dentals that long, unfortunately.
Yeah.
I worked with a veterinarian who is very thorough in her dental procedures, and I think we talked about this last time. Breaking up the procedure is an option, but it's typically not well received, you know, why didn't you finish the procedure, you know, those types of things. And to have that discussion, that's up to the veterinarian, I guess. You know, if the procedure is extending a period of time, do they make the phone call? But
well, especially to say, okay, maybe we're not gonna polish the teeth at the end, say
well,
this.
You wouldn't
I don't
do that.
Know.
Yeah, that wouldn't
really save you any time.
No.
Okay. No. Regarding the dental, and you can't really see anything on the radiographs that we have. There are times, I think we talked about this before, when those teeth are resorbing and they're ankylosing and they become bone,
yep,
basically. The periodontal ligament's gone, and those are extremely difficult to extract. They take, if you're going for every remnant of that root, that's a tough deal when they're like that. And that happens a lot. Interestingly, right now, there is a seminar DVM 360, and the title is ankylosed teeth or resorbing teeth, when is it appropriate to leave them? And I have left roots. I'm going to break through into the sinus if I keep going. I'm going to fracture a jaw if I keep going. I don't have evidence of infection or disease, and this is going on a long time, and I've got this problem, and I'm basically trying to use their term, not chip out bone. I have stopped, and now I find out that was okay in certain circumstances. Rather than now, a dental specialist is going to be able to have the equipment, knowledge to remove every speck of root in a case like this. But an option to leave some room is not totally against standards of dental practice.
Okay, so lots of discussion here.
Lots of discussion. I think the difficult part is that, again, while it's easy to look in hindsight and that this, you know, in this situation Coconut passed, there aren't any glaring violations of the statute. And I know that's very difficult for the complainant to hear, because we want some sort of answer as to why. But in this situation, the doctors did what they felt was in the best interest and followed the standards. I would actually have a motion to see no violation, but do a letter of concern and suggest that maybe we relook at some of our extraction techniques. In how we move forward, and also just thinking about, you know, I appreciate multimodal pain, but maybe the use of an opioid in a pet that's not otherwise, you know, whether or not that led to anything.
Yeah, as a judgment, and
yeah,
she was concerned about pain,
right?
Rightly so. Some of these animals can look like that because it's
because
pain.
Of pain.
Because of pain, so.
But I didn't see, I mean, understand the letter of concern, but I didn't see anything in there that made me go and how she took the teeth out. It took a while, but I don't necessarily know that there was anything that made me go, that's below the standard of care, or I'm concerned about that. And same on the pain. It may not be everybody's first choice, but is it really below the standard of care? I guess that's where I'm like, I don't even know that I would support a letter of concern, to be honest.
Yeah. There's sometimes when you're so sure that this patient is showing you these signs because of pain, and that's our responsibility to address that pain. So the thought process was probably an NSAID isn't going to do this for me. And buprenorphine is on the sedation scale, it's pretty mild. I mean, she didn't give a hydromorphone. Yeah.
Yeah, but we did give a high-end dose of.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I guess I just think of, you know, we have a patient who just had an anesthetic procedure who hasn't seemed to come fully and recovered from it, and then and I get that we do give opioids post-surgery, but usually there's certain, you know, that's just my recommendation.
Sure.
So we can leave it to a vote.
Any other discussion, or should we?
I just want to clarify, this was a non-emergency surgery.
Correct.
Was there a second? I'm sorry.
There was not. And I wanted to clarify who the letter was going to, both doctors or?
So the letter of concern, there'll be a letter of concern to Dr. Mayo, and it would just be on extraction techniques. And yes, maybe we're below the standard of care, but it's always good to refresh, just like Dr. Nalsi said. Like, maybe it's good to know that sometimes we can leave some stuff behind. So that would be my recommendation for Dr. Mayo, and then for Dr. Peachy, just looking at the use of the opioid in an otherwise kind of not perfect patient.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Mark, is it okay that she made those two motions together, kind of the letter of concern or detailing?
Separate.
Yes.
Separate. Okay. So for case 2285, I recommend the letter of concern in just reviewing extraction techniques, keeping current on extraction techniques.
Okay, is there a second?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to offer a letter of concern. Let's do a roll call, or?
It can be a voice vote.
Okay, let's do a voice vote then. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
Yes. Is it just two nays?
Okay, so motion passes.
Okay, so motion passes.
Yep.
Okay. All right, then moving on to the next one.
For case 2284, find no violation, but letter of concern of usage of opioid.
Second.
A motion and a second to again offer a letter of concern. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Nay.
So that one, there
looks
was
like
three.
It was 4-3.
Yep.
Yeah. And goes with the last.
Okay.
Yeah.
So motion carries on that one as well. So the board has voted to offer a letter of concern in both cases, 2284 and 2285. So this concludes this matter. And Dr. Peachy and Dr. Mayo, you will receive written confirmation of the board's action shortly. Then at next month's meeting, the board will consider adopting proposed finding of facts and conclusions of law, and after doing so, we'll then discuss and adopt.
Yeah. Oh,
no. Forget all that.
Yep.
It's just letters of concern. Okay, so if you have any questions, though, you can contact Victoria Whitmore, and thank you all for being here today.